This is The Guardian.
I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story. As the federal election nears, in New South Wales, several key seats for the Liberal Party have not endorsed a candidate. Behind this delay is a struggle over what the party stands for and who should be able to select their candidates. So far, this struggle has led to both the Prime Minister and the Supreme Court intervening.
Some childish games going on there, and they need to ensure they focus on winning this election for the goodness of the Australian people and forget their factional rubbish.
So, where did this conflict within the Liberal Party begin? And what could it mean for the upcoming federal election? Today, the Liberals' toxic internal dispute threatening key seats. It's Wednesday, the 9th of March. Hey.
Hello, Nora.
Anne Davies is an investigative reporter at Guardian Australia.
Looking forward to talking about the Liberals and their endless woes.
So, Anne, can you just give me a bit of a snapshot of the chaos in the New South Wales Liberal Party over the past few months and what it's all about?
Well, it's all over seats for the federal election, Laura. And as of last week, a number of key New South Wales seats, which were winnable for the Liberals, still didn't have their candidates. Now, we're only weeks away from the federal campaign starting. So the New South Wales Party has been trying to address this for a while. They've been hamstrung from as far back as May last year when nominations for candidates closed for most seats. So it's been a very long period of paralysis.
Before we go into what is behind this paralysis, what kind of seats are we talking about here?
Well, most of them are Sydney seats. They're all seats the Liberals could win. So we're talking prize seats like Warringah and Hughes. Then there's seats like Dobell and Parramatta, which are swing seats, and a good candidate could easily win them. And then there's three seats which are occupied by sitting MPs. So we're talking Farrer, which is the seat occupied by Susan Lee, who's the Environment Minister. We're talking about Mitchell, which is in northwest Sydney, and it's occupied at the moment by Alex Hawke. And then we're talking about North Sydney, another prize blue ribbon seat, which is held by Trent Zimmerman, who is a very important person in the moderate faction.
And how unusual is this to be so close to an election and not know who is running in some really key seats?
Well, I've covered politics for, I hate to say it, 30 years, and I don't think I've ever seen this happen.
Right, so if we want to understand this paralysis, where do we need to start in?
Okay, well, this is really about grassroots involvement in a political party. So political parties are organised a bit like a club or a company. So they have members who sign up and pay their dues, and then they elect people to the governing bodies of the party. Now, the Liberal Party in particular is run very much by its state branches, and then the federal party has a limited amount of control. So in the case of the state branch, there are members organised by geographic branches, and then there is what's called the state executive, which is a bit like the board of the company, and they make the day-to-day decisions about the party, control its finances, and elect the president and those sort of things. Mm. And the problem that's really at the heart of this story is that there's a conflict between the different levels of the party about how candidates should be selected. So the branch members want one thing, and the state and federal executives want something else. The branch members want more of a say, but the people with power inside the party, and particularly people like the Prime Minister, want to retain that power. So all of this is really about grassroots versus organisational politics. But the other big thing you need to understand is the role that the factions are playing in all of this.
Mm. What do we need to know about factions and how they work in the Liberal Party, Anne?
The Liberals have claimed in the past that they're not ruled by factions like Labor. There was one infamous moment back in 2015 when Malcolm Turnbull gave a speech at the Liberal Party State Council where he claimed,
"We're not run by factions. We're not run by..." Well, you may dispute that, but I have to tell you from experience, we are not run by factions.
He was greeted with laughter. Now, factions are groupings in parties, and there are three of them in New South Wales. There's the moderates, who are progressives. They're the people who supported marriage equality. They're often people who recognise that there needs to be action on climate change. And then there are two other factions. There is the hard right, which is predominantly grew out of a Catholic grouping. So Dominic Perrottet, the Premier of New South Wales, is part of the hard right. And then there is a breakaway group called the centre right. And as far as I can see, they seem to be more Anglican or Pentecostal. But nonetheless, they're both quite religious in their basis, and they probably support, you know, a tougher line on law and order. You know, there's a few climate skeptics who've ended up in the right, but not many. So that's basically the difference. So the factions from time to time have absolutely gone to war in New South Wales. I think because the moderates have more control over the institutional part of the party, and the right claim to have a much greater grassroots representation. So they said, we should have a more democratic process. So the right was behind the idea for the Warringah rules.
What are the Warringah rules, and how are they supposed to make the Liberal Party more democratic?
Yeah, so let me go back a step. So the Liberal Party used to work on the basis that it would form panels to choose the candidate in each seat, but they didn't give everyone a vote. The Warringah rules give every branch member an opportunity to have a say in who the Liberal Party candidate is.
And a branch member can be anyone? I mean, who is a branch member?
Anyone can join a political party. They all have safeguards. You know, you've got to be an active member to participate. Mm. So the mechanics of the rules are basically everybody who qualifies in the branch gets a vote. Mm-hmm. And then they had a bit of a compromise, which is branch members have 75% of the votes, and then the organisational wing of the party has 25% of the votes at any branch pre-selection. And they determine the candidate by turning up to a town hall meeting. The candidates parade their wares, answer questions, and then there's a series of votes until one candidate is selected.
Mm. But the idea is that under these new Warringah rules, those branch members, they've got a lot more voting power than what they used to have.
Yes, yes.
So how did all this history and these rules lead to such an impasse in selecting candidates for the election this year?
The first thing to say is that these new rules, the Warringah rules, add a degree of unpredictability to the pre-selection process. They have just come into force. They weren't used for 2019 for the federal election. And one of the first times they were used, we saw a really unusual result. Mm. So you might recall when Gladys Berejiklian resigned, it triggered a by-election. And they had one of the earliest Warringah rules pre-selections. And instead of the very popular mayor getting the job, as everyone thought she would, instead a right-wing conservative, Tim James, got pre-selected. And no one's really quite sure how this happened, but, you know, he had the numbers and he was very impressive on the day by all accounts. Mm. But the problem is they've got a candidate who arguably doesn't align with the people of Willoughby in that he's far more conservative in a seat that's largely progressive. And also I think the reality's dawned, particularly among the factional heavyweights, that their influence has been significantly diminished and they're not happy about that, nor is the Prime Minister happy, because usually Prime Ministers get to make what are called captain's picks for some seats. You know, they might have a celebrity candidate, or they might have someone who they really think will be fantastic in, you know, Warringah or Hughes. And so they want to be able to parachute them in. And now none of that is very easy to do under the Warringah rules.
Right. So what is the ultimate fear from the top of the Liberal Party, looking at the seats that have been in contention over the past couple of months? What are the other unpredictable outcomes they were worried about?
Well, the main unpredictable outcome was the loss of two ministers and another sitting member, Trent Zimmerman. So in the case of Susan Lee, a young Conservative operative by the name of Christian Ellis moved down to the seat of Farrer, which is down near Albury, and a lot of new people have joined her very small branches, mainly because they're unhappy with her stance on water policy. But also I think, you know, perhaps Ellis has done a bit of recruitment since he moved down there. And the result is if she goes to a ballot, she will lose her seat. Now, that's a bad look for the Prime Minister. He's got hardly any women in Cabinet, and losing Susan Lee would be a problem. And there's similar problems in Mitchell, where Alex Hawke, the Prime Minister's best buddy, is under threat. And then, of course, there's Trent Zimmerman, who's a moderate factional organiser and very popular with the gay community and progressives for his stance on marriage equality.
You can see it would be a tricky bind for someone like Scott Morrison. You don't want to renege on this whole revamp and Democratic vote in his party, but you also don't want to lose Cabinet ministers and important MPs. So what did they do?
Well, this is where things have got really, really messy. So there's been numerous attempts to get the New South Wales State Executive to bypass the Warringah rules for these three seats and also a number of other winnable seats. The problem with that is that they needed 90% support on the state executive, which is the 25-member board of the Liberal Party, and they've just been unable to do that. So at the moment, they've just been hamstrung week after week.
So what kind of options were they putting forward while they were hamstrung to get out of this paralysis?
Well, there's been two camps, really. There's been the people, the factional organisers, who've tried to do a grand bargain and carve up these nine precious winnable seats. So the tensions have descended into this incredible game playing with the rules. And then there's been another group on state executive who've been pushing really hard to try and get the Warringah rules implemented and have pre-selections go ahead. So all of this dragged on so long that two things happened. One was there were threats of federal intervention, and secondly, there was a challenge in the Supreme Court. Now, this was only partially related to pre-selections. Basically, it had dragged on so long that the very existence of the state executive was now under challenge, because the state executive has been unable to call an annual general meeting of the Liberal Party. And so the state executive, the president, got legal advice saying, we're going to cease to exist on the 25th of February. So we have to hand over to the feds. And one of the pro-democracy forces, if I can call them that, took it to the Supreme Court and won. And so the party stays in existence until 28th of March. And so they've got till then now to resolve the crisis.
Right. So basically the Supreme Court had to step in and say, get it sorted out within the next month. Otherwise, you might not be able to exist as a party.
You know, really, it's pretty embarrassing to have your members taking you to court and not a good look this close to an election.
Next, how ongoing battles over seats could threaten the coalition's chances in the upcoming election. Right, so they're given a month. What did they do?
So there's been more attempts at trying to sort this out. And last Friday, they came up with a bit of a compromise. The federal executive stepped in. Now, the federal executive is made up of all the state branches around Australia and the Prime Minister and a few other officials. And they said, look, we will stage a very limited intervention. We're going to save the three sitting members. So they came in, took control of the party for 72 hours and used their power to appoint those three candidates. So they will now not face these internal elections. But there are still many, many seats to be sorted out. It's really not resolved at all yet, and so there's a bit more to go over the coming weeks.
So Environment Minister Susan Ley, Immigration Minister Alex Hawke and Trent Zimmerman are all endorsed without any risky democratic voting processes. What are some of the most contentious battles still being fought for pre-selection in the remaining seats?
Well, I think Hughes stands out. So Hughes was the seat that was held by Craig Kelly, who has defected to the United Australia Party. And so the Liberals are looking for a new candidate. So there's been a number of people nominate. Most notable is Melanie Gibbons, who's the state MP, but that would have its own problems because it would trigger a by-election in the state parliament. There's been a few lawyers and local people nominate. But for some reason, the right have insisted that this is their seat because Craig Kelly was a member of the right faction and they want to put in this guy called Alex Dorr.
Who is Alex Dorr?
He was the young Liberal president. He has some very powerful backers and his uncle is the editor-in-chief of The Australian, Chris Dorr. He also worked for Alan Jones. So, you know, no one's quite sure why the right are so intent on getting him in.
So the right of the party is proposing this factional deal that could see Alex Dorr parachuted in without that kind of democratic Warringah rules voting process. How do people in Hughes feel about that?
Okay, well, as far as we can see, they're absolutely furious about it, mainly because they want to be able to choose their own candidate. The locals really haven't had any say for a decade in who their local member is. And this really will matter in Hughes because they're facing a challenge from two independent candidates who are community independents. They're very keen to say, like some of the other independents, that they will listen to the community and represent the community of Hughes. So I think potentially parachuting someone in could be quite risky.
Right, and this does seem to be a kind of microcosm of the broader issue that you spoke about at the top, grassroots versus people who are powerful within the organisation just deciding who the candidate is.
Well, it is. And I can see why factional organisers and the Prime Minister may not want the branches to choose. But on the other hand, it is so disempowering if they don't actually have a say in who their local member is. And so you've got these tensions that are operating within the party and it's really threatening to, you know, absolutely cripple the Liberal Party in New South Wales.
As you mentioned, they've only got a few weeks to sort out the remaining pre-selections. Otherwise, there might be some dire consequences. What are they doing right now to try and fix this problem in the remaining seats?
I hesitate to predict what the Liberal Party will do. The most likely thing at this stage is that those backing democracy have come up with a truncated program to get the pre-selections done. They've got to have them done by the 25th of March. Otherwise, the federal executive have said they'll move in. But over this week and the next, they'll be trying to sort that out. And if anyone decides to rock the boat, well, actually, you need two or three people to vote against it on state executive, it will fall in a heap. So I'm reluctant to predict that democracy will prevail, but I think that's the most likely outcome at this stage.
As you say, some of these pre-selection conflicts have been going on since mid last year. How much has this damaged the Liberal Party, both in terms of their internal cohesion, but also in terms of their prospects at the next election?
Well, when I started writing this story, I thought, no one's going to read this except for a few Liberal Party members. But actually, it seems to have caught on a bit, that people are just fascinated by this inability of a major institution to resolve a crisis. In terms of the public perception, you know, there's an old saying in politics, if you can't govern yourself, you can't govern the country. And usually people are pretty reluctant to vote for parties that can't get their act together. But on a practical level, it's going to be really hard for who's ever selected in those areas to get going in such a short time. Usually people have candidates in the field at least 6 months before and ideally 9 months before, because people don't vote for people they don't know. You know, they just, they want to be able to put a face to the name. And that's why candidates go out and do door knocking. You know, they go around their entire electorate trying to just get 5 minutes of someone's time, so they go, oh, yeah, Joe Bloggs, he's the one who came and knocked on my door. Also, in a lot of these Liberal seats, they're facing independent candidates who are running on a really strong local representation platform. But to get that message across, you have to actually be there and convince people that you know what the problems are in your local area. So coming in really late, there'll be a trust deficit for those new candidates.
So is it possible, post the federal election, we might be looking back at this time and analysing it as a serious issue in how the coalition went in certain seats, that this chaos may be a decisive factor for them?
Yeah, well, especially, you know, the Liberal Party is already acknowledging that it faces a tough fight in WA to hold seats, in Queensland to hold seats, and they'd hope to actually pick up a few seats in New South Wales, as well as holding what they already have. I think that they've squandered that opportunity by not having the candidates in the field in some pretty important seats.
That was Anne Davies, an investigative reporter at Guardian Australia. You can read the latest updates on this evolving story at theguardian.com, including Anne's piece on the federal intervention that happened last Friday, and a piece from early February titled "Leaking Explosive Text Messages Won't Solve the Liberals' Toxic Internal Dispute," which explains how the extraordinary leak of text messages describing Prime Minister Scott Morrison as a horrible, horrible person, a fraud and a psycho may be linked to this story. Okay, that's it for today. This episode was produced by Jake Morecambe, Karishma Luthria, Alison Chan and Zoe Victoria. Sound design and mixing by Daniel Simo. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Martignoni, Gabrielle Jackson and me, Laura Murphy-Oates. Okay, catch you tomorrow.